call the case.
Case number SCWC-29467, Hart v. Tyco Insurance Company, arguing for the petitioner, Cal Chipchase. Also appearing for the petitioner, Chris Gooden. Arguing for the respondent, Wayne Nassar. Also appearing for the respondent, Connie Chow. Argument on the merits.
Good morning, counsel. First, I just wanted to confirm I had filed a notice in this case this morning. Did both counsel for both sides see that notice?
Yes, sir.
And were there any objections to my participation in the case?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. In my understanding, Mr. Chipchase, you'll be reserving 10 minutes for rebuttal, and Mr. Nassar will be giving you a warning with 10 minutes to go during your argument. Very good. Very well. Mr. Chipchase, if you'd like to proceed.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Cal Chipchase. I represent Charles and Lisa Marie Hart. Your Honors, the ICA's error was to focus on what the state failed to plead and failed to do, rather than on what the state actually alleged. If you search the ICA's SDO, there is no discussion of, or even quotation of, the allegations the state actually made and the prayer for relief the state actually asserted. Instead, the ICA described those allegations and prayer as procedurally defective and pro forma, and indeed they were. But those defects had nothing to do with Tyco's duty to defend the Harts. The duty to defend attaches to claims that are pro forma, claims that are procedurally defective, claims that are false and fraudulent. And this is because the duty to defend does not depend upon the outcome of the case. So rather than looking at the defects in the pleading, we search for the allegations actually made, and we comb those allegations for any possibility of coverage, even a remote possibility. To the extent there's any doubt as to whether the duty to defend applies, that doubt is resolved in favor of coverage, in favor of the insured. That's from Trias Court. The insurer may only deny defense if the pleadings clearly and unambiguously exclude the possibility of coverage, and all other facts known to the insurer and reasonably discoverable by the insurer establish and confirm there's no possibility of coverage. That's from Gary Road. In this case, if we start with the policy, the very first risk insured against, the very first interest protected, is that title is vested in the name of the Harts. The title is not vested in anyone else. And with that pledge, that insurance pledge, Tyco agreed to defend the Harts in any litigation in which any third party alleged a claim adverse to the title or interest as insured, adverse to that ownership interest being vested in the Harts exclusively. In the underlying case, Your Honors, at page 339 of the record is the state's answer, the state's response to pleading. In that response to pleading, at page 342, the state expressly claimed it had interests in and affecting the property. The state then went on to identify six specific interests it claimed it had in and affecting the property. Among those interests was an express reservation of any interest that may have escheated to the state. The state then asked the land court in its prayer, asked the land court to rule that the state has reserved any interests in the property that may have escheated to the state. Escheat is a reversion of title to the state.
But may have reserved, is that the same as ruling that in fact there was an escheat as opposed to simply acknowledging that any claims on that issue had been reserved and not waived by virtue of the state answering?
Your Honor, the state did not reserve claims, and it certainly did not reserve the right to assert a claim in the future. It reserved interests. The interests it reserved were in the nature of escheat. Escheated interest, which is this reversionary interest to the state. The state is reserving to itself any interests in the Harts property, in that perfect title that Tyco has agreed to insure and his guarantee is vested in them, reserve to itself any such interest that may have escheated. That reservation put the Harts title in issue and required a defense. When Tyco refused to defend it, the Harts defended themselves. And they defended it by moving for summary judgment on that escheat claim and all the claims that the state asserted it had in or affecting the property. The land court actually ruled on all of those claims.
But the actual prayer for relief said the state has reserved any interest in the property that may have escheated. So all they're asking for is, are they not simply to acknowledge that they've reserved those interests, not that any interests have, in fact, is cheated?
Your Honor, reserved against what? Reserved against the Hart's title. The Hart's title is pledged and promised to be vested exclusively in them. If the state is reserving its cheated interest to itself, it is acting adverse and against the Hart's title and interest. It is, in effect, encumbering and rendering their title defective. That defect, that risk, has to be addressed. And at the pleading stage, that is when we determine the duty to defend. And at that stage,
if the court, had found that there was this cheated property, would that appear on the TCT, and how would it appear?
Your Honor, it's impossible to know how it would have, for certain anyway, how it would have played out because they were in fact defended. But the possibility existed that these interests, this reservation, would be taken away from the Harts, taken away from their property, and indeed appear on their TCT and render it or their title defective.
Well, you said the tax or the land court determined that there were some of the claims that were upheld by the land court.
That's
the
right.
Land court upheld. And so those claims, would that be reflected on the TCT?
Your Honor, the reissued or the new TCT is not in the record. It takes about 2 years to issue a new TCT.
My question was, would that appear on the TCT?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, for not being more direct. The answer is I don't know, because the new TCT had not been issued by the time this record was established, and I've never seen a copy of it. But that is the risk in reserving those interests. They have to be reserved against something. Land court title is supposed to be perfect title. It shows only the encumbrances noted therein. If the state is reserving and developing additional interest to it, those interests to exist.
Would those interests be an encumbrance?
Yes, Your Honor.
So then, does the TCT reflect encumbrances?
Yes, Your Honor, the TCT would reflect.
So would the TCT in this case reflect these as encumbrances, whatever the land court said are interests of the state? Would that be reflected on the TCT as encumbrances?
It should be, Your Honor. Whether it was in fact, I simply don't know. But at the time of the pleading, that was the risk. That was the risk facing the Hart.
Result so at the time of the pleading, you would have to know whether there's a reasonable possibility that these matters would appear on the TCT and thus be encumbrances on the TCT, wouldn't you?
Your Honor, we don't have to know whether there's a reasonable possibility or probability or any such guarantee.
Okay, whatever, that there was a possibility.
Yes, Your Honor. Any possibility.
So the answer would be yes?
Yes, Your Honor.
You would have to know that there would be a possibility that these encumbrances would appear on the TCT?
If I understand your question correctly, I think it dovetails into two points.
Just have to say yes or no.
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to make sure I understand the question. No, Your Honor, if I'm understanding it correctly, and I apologize if I'm not. The duty to defend does not depend upon the possibility that the claim will succeed, in other words, on the merits of the claim. It only depends upon the possibility that if that claim succeeds, there is an insured injury.
I guess that's why I preface my question by saying, if the court, the land court, had said these are, because it recognized, you said, certain interests.
Yes, Your Honor.
Those interests would be reflected as encumbrances on the TCT.
Yes, Your Honor. That is the risk the Harts were facing on the Escheat Reservation and all the other reservations. The other reservations that the state made were excluded by the terms of the policy. Tycor's conceded Escheat was not, and it couldn't, because that is the very interest insured that the Harts own the property.
If I could interrupt you 1 minute.
Of course.
Mr. Chief Chase, in addition to consolidating the two parcels of land, the complaint seemed to seek to establish a new seaward boundary, did it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there any relationship between the Escheat claim of the state and the establishment of a new seaward boundary?
No, Your Honor. The establishment of the seaward boundary had to do with the public trust and the extent of it, and of course the land court's order in the TCT couldn't encroach upon the public trust. So the recognition of the seaward boundary was simply recognizing rights in the public trust that the state already had as a matter of law. And we did not oppose that part of the state's request.
And one more question, please. What is your response to Tyker's argument that if we accept your logic, there would be a duty to defend in virtually every action involving real property?
My first reaction is I don't know if that's true. There's nothing in the record to establish that as a fact. My second reaction is that it wouldn't matter if, in fact, the state is continually asserting frivolous claims like land court title has escheated to it. The title company, with its superior knowledge and superior resources, is in a better position to defend those claims than the individual insurers in each individual case, which is what the insurers were left to do here. And when the land court decided the Hart's motion for summary judgment and entered a form of order that the state had prepared, and in that form of order, the land court granted the Hart's motion in part. And in part, it said, the motion is granted, quote, as the court has determined that there is no basis for the state's claims for the rights of native tenants, mineral and metallic mines, and escheat. That's at page 396 of the record. So the parties below, the party that had brought the claim, the state, recognized it was making a claim for escheat. The Harts recognized the state was making a claim for escheat. The land court recognized and decided the escheat reservation as a claim. The only party that has refused to recognize it's a claim is Tyco. The duty to defend and the duty to indemnify are distinct. The duty to defend is broader, and from the insured's perspective, it is often the more valuable policy benefit. The insured expects
that Tegor acknowledged that there was coverage for escheat.
Yes, Your Honor.
So there's some reference to a present interest. What's the relevance of that?
To be frank, Your Honor, I don't understand how Tegor gets to that point or Tegor gets to that point. The language the state used was reserves any interest that may have escheated, meaning the interest has already passed to the state, and the state is merely asking the land court to recognize those interests that have already passed.
Could the land court have actually recognized the escheat claim? Or does that have to go to, well, they argue Chapter 665.
Procedurally, Your Honor, the state's claim was defective. Absolutely. Defects are rarely self-executing, though, or self-effectuating. Someone has to assert them. And that someone in this case should have been Tyco. If the duty to defend...
So it is your position that Tycor should have filed a motion to dismiss the escheat claim based on the procedural defect because you were in land court?
In all candor, Your Honor, Tycor could have resolved it any way it wanted. If the state was willing to stipulate to dismissal, the Harts would have accepted that. They could have moved for summary judgment as we did. They could have moved to dismiss. All possible options. What they couldn't do is the very thing they did. Simply say, we're not going to cover it, we're not going to defend you, and you're left to defend yourselves. If the duty to defend is going to remain strong and robust in Hawaii as it has for all of these years, an insurer cannot avoid its defense obligation merely because the claim is procedurally defective or pro forma or comes up in all kinds of cases.
Tegor acknowledged it had, there was coverage for its cheat.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, but they try to distinguish that by saying there was no present interest asserted. So what is the basis of that, and how do we get to that?
I understand, Your Honor. The only way that I see Tycor getting there is by changing the wording of what the state actually said, changing it from the state reserves any interest that may have escheated, and asking for that in its prayer, asking for affirmative ruling on that in its prayer, to the state merely reserve the right to assert a possible defense, is one way that Tycor has phrased it, or that the state merely reserved the right to assert a claim in the future is another way that Tycor has phrased it. But what it reserved was not rights or claims. It reserved interests, escheated interests. Those interests have to be reserved against something. And the only something in issue in the land court proceeding was the Hart's title. That is the interest the state claimed or reserved. And that required a defense. As soon as the defense obligation turns upon merits or defects, it has been restricted. It has lost something. And as soon as we create that exception, the natural tendency is to extend that exception more and more until the firm rule that any possibility, any allegation that raises a mere possibility, clear and unambiguous, all of those standards that have been articulated begin to erode. Tyco was obliged to defend in this case. It failed to, and so the Harts are entitled to recover their fees and costs. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, I will reserve the balance of my time.
Mr. Chipchase, assume that we agree that you're entitled to recover fees and costs. Tycor makes some arguments that you're kind of extending it, this state had submitted responses to the motions for summary judgment, admitting that it was making a claim for a cheat. Would you agree with them then that the fees should be cut off then?
As soon as the land court's order entered, I mean, let me back up. The duty to defend continues through the resolution of the claim, including any possible appeal. So the fees cut off at the resolution of the claim, including final judgment, any possible appeal. I absolutely agree with that position, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Yesser.
Associate Justices, Counsel, may it please the Court, good morning.
Good morning.
It's been a long time since I've been up here. And interesting, the last time I was, probably 15 years ago, Jack Schweigert was in front of me. It's a big circle. With me today at Counsel table is Connie Chow. We represent Tycor Title Insurance Company in a case that has no analog in anything either side has been able to find. What the state did was they took an answer.
Would Tycor be prohibited from expressly excluding a cheat?
Oh, no, a cheat goes to the heart of title. Let's understand what a cheat is.
Okay.
A cheat.
So you could not exclude a cheat?
Could not.
Okay.
Could not. A cheat is the reservation that the sovereign holds in every single piece of property in this state, really personal. Every property is subject to the reservation.
Isn't that true of mineral rights?
The property itself, our bank accounts, are subject to escheat. My trust accounts in my firm are subject to escheat. Land is subject to escheat. And basically what that is if nobody shows ownership of land or title, I think it's 5 years for personal property, it's 15 years for land, the state may come forward, start a case, and prove escheat for land. For personal property, I think all they have to do is advertise. But for land, they have to go into court, notify everyone, and get a decree that they are now the owner of the court, owner of the land, all right? But remember, when the state says we reserve escheat, the state has the escheat reservation. Every piece of property is subject to go back to the state if there's a long period of non-ownership. Somebody dies intestate is the typical, and for 15 years no one is in possession of the property as owner. That will trigger. It doesn't automatically make the land the estates. What it does is it gives the state the right to go and claim it.
If that's true, Mr. Nasser, then why does the state have to reserve it?
First, I don't know what reserve means, but let me explain. There's three kinds of reservation in Black's Law Dictionary, two of which apply to real property, and two of them apply to the kinds of things they're reserving here. When the sovereign makes a grant, it can create a new interest and reserve it back. Mineral and metallic mines is the common one. I grant to you Ke Kalanohi, Black Acre, and create and reserve back mineral and metallic mines that I keep as the sovereign. That is a reservation, okay? So we're using the term reservation. The state's using this term inadvisedly. It uses it advisedly for mineral and metallic mines. The native tenants' rights came out subject to. It wasn't a reservation because the native tenants' rights were for the tenants, not for the sovereign. But all the lands went out subject to the rights of native tenants. The states here are saying, I'm reserving the rights of native tenants. Well, there's nothing to reserve because it's not yours. It's somebody else's. And then there's another kind of reservation, and that's land set aside for a particular purpose. It doesn't apply here. For example, an Indian reservation. That's another kind of reservation we have in land. The only other reservation you'll see in Blacks, and the kind of reservations we talk about, is I'm putting this aside for another time. I'm reserving it. I'm holding it back as, for example, a non-waiver. I'm reserving my right to argue in rebuttal. That's a reservation.
There's no statute of limitations for SG claims?
You know, this,
you're saying that the state could reserve an SG?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you're saying that the state could reserve an SG claim back from back from
1800s? I guess I have to, right. The answer is the SG is always in every land, so the state can't waive it. It will always have it. But Justice Acoba asked a question, and here's what is at the guts. We're in land court. And you asked the question, is the escheat going to show on the TCT? Why is that important? Because the TCT is the title.
So you're saying that because we're in land court, there was no duty to defend?
No, what I'm saying is because we're in land court, the only way the state had an interest in of escheated land before they filed this is if they had a TCT in their name. The owners of the land allege, remember this is an answer, it's not a complaint. The owners of the land allege, we are the owners of the land, we own two lots, we want to put them together, and we've got a new seaward boundary. Okay?
What if somebody that was named here filed a counterclaim for adverse possession?
In Ray Danny, we've had that.
In land court?
Yeah, and land court, the statute says you can't get adverse possession in land court, and there's issues, but...
Is adverse possession excluded?
It's not covered by title policies.
It's not covered?
No, possessory interest is not covered by title policies. But what I'm trying to say is, Justice Acoba asked, if they had a sheet, would this show up on the TCT? If they had a sheet, they'd already have a TCT, because that's the only way you get it. You have to file a decree in court. And the only way you can perfect an interest in land in land court as the owner of the land.
Let me ask you
is
this.
To own the TCT.
What if we were in land court, so somebody filed a counterclaim saying, no, I have a deed to this property.
Correct.
Would Tycor then have to defend that in land court?
Even
though land court didn't have anything, there was nothing in land court, the TCT, to indicate that this person had any title?
Generally speaking, yes. It's a hypothetical, but generally speaking, yes. But what we have here, the question is, did the state, from everything we can see, remember, unlike a casualty insurance, where you're insuring a future event, and you define occurrence, and you define all the terms, so when that event occurs, I have to know the facts to see whether it's covered. Title insurance looks backwards. So it looks at a point in time and says, as of this date, here, July 13th, 2005, Hearts own the property subject to the terms and condition from the time immemorial to the present. Anything that happens after that is not covered. We're just saying at this point in time. At the same time, the Hearts got their TCT, exact same time. We're compelled to have a policy that looks exactly like the TCT. Why? Because the TCT is the title. It's conclusive. Section 50188 says, the TCT is conclusive as to all matters stated in it, except as set forth in this chapter. And a cheat isn't one of those issues. So it's conclusive. If it doesn't say there's a cheat, there's no cheat. If the state honestly was making a claim for a cheat, I'm not talking about defenses now, we're in land court, honestly making a claim for a cheat, it would already have the title. It's black and white. It's not incremental. They either have it or they don't have it. So when they say reserve, now I get back to the reserve. So when they say reserve, they're not saying we're reserving as we would native tenant rights or one of those.
So you are arguing that there's no duty to defend because we are in land court in this case.
I'm saying that's one of the things. And I think it's compelling because...
Are you conceding then if this was regular system, you would have a duty to defend?
No, and I'll tell you why. Here's the reason. There's some real, when you're writing about this thing, there's some real interesting policy considerations. I think they were brought up in Justice Nottingham's minority opinion dissenting opinion in Derry Road. Look, when we get Coates issues on duty to defend, every single court that looks at it says, goodness, we've got to protect everyone against artful pleading. We can't just let somebody say, I aimed a gun at his head, waited 10 seconds, and then shot and call it negligence. It's what you're alleging that counts, not the spin you put, the legal spin you put on it. Otherwise, we'll have a negligence claim in every single case we have. What's alleged here? This is a hypothetical. It's a non-justiciable hypothetical. Assuming land was escheated, I'm reserving it. I'm not saying it did. And you see what happens is when we're relying on Rule 11 and we're relying on the rules of pleading, where you have to have a short, plain statement of facts showing entitlement to recover, and we're relying on Rule 11 that you have to have some factual basis and legal basis for making the claim, and you are able to plead, I don't know whether it happened, but if it did, I want damages for it. I don't know whether the car hit the back of my car, but if it did, I want damages for it. We've thrown the rules away, and all the protections about artful pleading are out the window. So my biggest problem with this is the AG didn't say it is cheated. And by the way, after we asked her, we said, were you trying to make a claim? She said, no, I wasn't trying to assert a claim. She was just trying to reserve, protect.
Are there any TCTs that say the state reserves any interest in property that may have escheated to the state?
No, because because the reservation of escheat is in every single property anyway, and because it either escheated or it did. I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. In land court, the only way you know it escheated is because a TCT already issued. Okay, other way it can happen.
The state makes. You say not a claim, you call it a reservation. Mr. Chipchase says it's basically a claim for his cheat.
Right.
Somebody has to find out, do you really mean it? Why is it that the Harts have to pay Mr. Chipchase to find out, did you really mean his cheat, instead of having the title company defend them on this cheat claim, which is apparently covered, and for you to ask on behalf of the Harts, do you really mean it?
Okay. Because, first, the pleading is hypothetical. Because, second, we already know the state of title. We already know because the title company's already done the title. So the title company already knows that on the date of the policy, the land court ensured that the Harts owned the property. So you've got those two facts. And lastly, umpteen years' worth of experience. We're in the policy question. I file a suit on a note, and I get 25 defenses, one of which is comparative negligence. What do you do with it? You just ignore it. Those pumped out pleadings that you get. And so we can't invite the public to file something that says, hypothetically, if something happened, we're entitled, and call an insurance company in to defend, or actually call anybody in to defend. That's what the problem is. But the experience is this, and here's where, thank you for letting us argue, because for us down in the trenches, every time we file an action against the state as a neighbor, land court, regular system, whatever, you get these reservations. Every time you do, it's just matter of form. Mr. Chipchase is absolutely right. We all use form pleadings. Just because it's a form doesn't mean it's wrong. But it doesn't mean it was thought out or intended to be either. And one of the things that I thought was significant was our experience shows that the state would not follow through or wasn't trying to claim escheat, which is years of experience with the title the way it is. There's no escheat in. There's no civil action for escheat. There's no land court action for escheat. There's no legal or factual possibility that this cheat could
then why couldn't Tycor file a motion for summary judgment on this cheat claim and I see you can't get attorney's fees against the state for frivolous actions, frivolous claims.
But again, it comes down to when is a claim a claim? That's my real answer to that. When is a claim a claim? Is it enough to simply say, if something may have occurred, I want to reserve rights? Okay. When was the last time you saw a plaintiff claim damages for an automobile accident? I reserve the right to claim damages for the automobile accident that may have occurred between me and you. That's not a failure to state a claim. In the scientific community, you call that noise. It's nothing. It's nothing.
You think the Harts should have just ignored the state.
Of course. And you know what would have happened if they ignored? See, here's the thing is, the lady that was the claims counsel called this correctly. The state never intended to make a claim. And what she said was, she didn't deny outright. She said, based on what we know, this doesn't look like the state intends to make a claim. But if they come forward and make a claim for a Jeep, we'll be there. Nobody said anything. What would you do if you were the lawyer and $30,000 of fees were at stake? You'd call up the AG and say, are you really making a claim? Because the AG says yes. You go, title company, she's making a claim. Or you'd send a stipulation over. I understand you're saying that should be the title company, but put yourself in the shoes of the insured counsel. Why didn't they do that? Because they knew like everybody else that the state wasn't making a claim here and never intended to. They didn't want to get the answer.
Your obligation to insure was fixed at the time the policy was issued. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So that if there was no escheat claim outstanding at that point, then your policy would not cover it.
Yes.
So if the state had raised the allegation here and an escheat claim did arise, say, I don't know, 10 years or 20 years from the date of your policy, would you be obligated to defend it?
No, post-policy manage, as I said, this is not an occurrence. This is looking backward in time. So one answer to the question is, if this is a claim, and I know what land court is, I know that my TCT is inviolate. The state itself ensured the Harts that they were vested with title to the property on July 13th, 2005. If after that a escheat occurred, that's not covered by a policy. That's a post-policy event. The state doesn't say when it occurred or when it didn't or how far back. I mean, one of the problems is, as we've said, Gary Rogue, I've got problems with Gary Rogue, including how long it takes to read. But one thing it says for sure is the facts alleged in support are what count. Okay? The facts alleged in support of the claim are what count to analyze what the claim is and whether it's covered. There aren't any facts alleged here.
Why didn't Tegor file a deck action?
Didn't think it was necessary. And as I said, it turned out she called us absolutely right. The state never intended to make a claim. Isn't that probative that the AG who wrote it said we never intended to make a claim?
Are you trying to raise the specter that says the state is involved in every piece of property that then insurance companies will be subject to having to defend all of these, claims simply because the state will always reserve stuff like mineral rights, et cetera, and it's cheap?
Not really.
Okay, just wanted to know.
The insurance is a business. You got to pay off sometime, and you got to cover sometime. But if you do the analysis correctly, you take a look at the facts alleged and see whether the facts alleged will knowledge that you have at the time of tender, because the title company already has all the knowledge of title looking backwards, it already knows there was no escheat. And one thing that Justice Levinson said in Derry Road was, it isn't enough that the knowledge you have can be used on a motion to dismiss. It isn't enough that the knowledge you have could defeat the claim. It must be conclusive. Read section 501-88, which says the TCT is conclusive. Read Waikiki Malia out of this court. Read Honolulu Memorial Park out of this court.
So you almost had no risk on the issuance of your policy.
You know, there are...
If you if you insure strictly on what the TCD says.
Okay. What is title insurance? Title insurance, remember it started out being, particularly in the East, lawyers would go through the grantor-grantee index all the way from the beginning of title down to the present and render an opinion of title saying, I think so-and-so owns the property subject to X. That's all they used to do. Ultimately, insurance, an insurance industry built up on the East Coast, which insured the lawyer's opinion. Essentially, it was negligence insurance. So this, the lawyer's title insurance would ensure that the lawyer's reading was accurate. In modern times, the lawyers were gone. Now it's all done by computers, and it's all done by people that search and what have you, and there's no more lawyer opinions. Okay? But it's still the same thing. It's still, if you do your job correctly, you shouldn't have many claims. The casualty insurer cannot know that. He's got to rate and hope that the future isn't much different than the past. The title insurer is relying on its ability to correctly read the title and determine whether who's got good title and who doesn't, and to insure accordingly. But in answer to your question, I can't tell you how many times people have said, why do I need insurance for land court? That's a different matter, because our insurance policy looks exactly the same as a TCP, because it has to, by law, okay? So yeah, why do you get insurance for land court?
Sorry?
Land court makes mistakes.
Oh.
Now, if I could ask you a question,
yes.
Mr. Nasser, it seems to me that all of our duty to defend cases look at the situation from the viewpoint of the potential insurer. And if I'm following your logic, you, because of your vast experience in real estate and these kind of cases, and your claims agent and your knowledge of the state practices, you feel that you're in a better position to make the judgment as to whether there should be coverage or not. And that is a bit of a frightening concept to me, rather than looking at it from the insurance point of view. What is your comment?
I hope not. As I said, remember the Dairy Road Partner says, if you've got conclusive facts, then you can deny. And we do have conclusive facts. We have the Land Court TCT and the Land Court record as of the date of that insurance. I know there was no cheat as a matter of fact, law, and no possibility of this cheat before that time. I know that by this court's ruling and by the statutes. There's no possibility as cheat occurred. Remember, as cheat means the state owns it, the hearts don't. So for the state to issue a TCT in the name of the hearts when the state itself owned it, they don't make that kind of
mistake. So again, what if this was regular system?
Yeah, the regular system, we don't have the land court backdrop, that's true, and my problem with the whole thing is that the hypothetical nature of the claim, I'm really concerned about, you have a supervisory capacity over the whole, I mean, you can't even countenance people writing these kinds of pleadings, really. I mean, Rule 11 doesn't count. If I don't have to say the event occurred, if I don't have to say the traffic accident occurred, and that you weren't paying attention, and by not paying attention, you smacked. If I don't have to say that, all I have to say is, you owe me damages.
As a practical matter, these kinds of escheat reservations or claims, however we characterize it, are really not that common, correct? It's only because this consolidation petition was filed.
Oh, it is, yeah, in every case where the states joined in a real property case, pretty common. You just ignore them.
They always assert escheat?
I can't say they always do, but they usually do. They a laundry list of reservations is the best I can say, most of which don't apply to the property you're dealing with, and some don't. And 90% of the time, you sit down with the AG for 10 minutes, and the matter's resolved.
If a TCT is conclusive, then wouldn't that be a defense to any claim and every claim?
Yeah, it was a defense here. And what I'm saying is
well,
the difference between, yes, it is. And so there's a line between when is this proof and used as a defense, which they used for the native tenant right claims, They said, hey, we've got a TCT and it doesn't have native tenant rights on it. By the way, your question about the decree says that the new TCT will have the same encumbrances as the old one, not any new ones. That's what the decree says in the land court. So I hope that that explains why the concept of reservations is all screwed up in here, and that's one problem. But every single person who read this, I mean, for us down in the trenches, I read it, the claims counsel read it, two judges read it, and they all read it exactly the same way. This is a way the state is worried about not waiving rights they have, and they just put it out there. They're not asserting a present claim that needs a defense. They're just saying, I'm reserving my right to claim it, if there's anything out there. It's the same thing as writing 24 affirmative defenses that we see all the time in simple cases. Some lawyer is concerned, I'm going to waive something, so I'm going to throw all of these defenses out there. And if you actually tried every one of those defenses, or you sent comparative negligence to your insurer, that's all it says. I defend on the grounds of comparative negligence. That would be crazy. We'd be going nuts. You handle the defenses that are appropriate, you or sit down with the other counsel, and you ignore the ones that aren't. But you see these things all over the place. And when you're, if you're going to write something about this, you've got to say something about throwing things into a pleading without really thinking about where it is and making a hypothetical claim is something you're not going to countenance, regardless whether there's coverage or there isn't coverage. It's a real problem, not only for the insurance companies, but for the lawyers who've got to practice. Well, I see my time's just about up, and I think we've covered everything I was going to cover. I think we have. Questions?
No further questions. Thank you, Mr. Nassar. Mr. Chipchase, your rebuttal.
Your Honors, each one of the points that Mr. Nassar made, and he summed it up there at the end, the TCT is a defense to the escheat claim. That's right. But who has to assert the defense? The insured or the insurer who is pledged, as he said, this TCT lists all the encumbrances you have. There are no others. In a case where the state doesn't make a defense of escheat, doesn't say we may assert escheat in the future if in the future any interest escheats to us, it says we reserve any interest that has already escheated. And
Mr. Chipchase, what about Mr. Nassar's argument that in order for it to be considered a claim, there must be some underlying facts to support it?
Your Honor, if we look at the history of the duty to defense cases in this state, and I'll just pick on First Insurance because it's an early case, the allegation there in the Furtado pleading, or proceeding rather, was merely that the state of Hawaii, each one, carelessly, recklessly, and negligently failed to post guards, barriers, lights, warning signals, etc. Carelessly, recklessly, negligently. A conclusion. There was a duty to defend in that case. There did not end up being indemnity because the state prevailed, but there was a defense obligation in that case. And so what Mr. Nassar's argument does is blur those distinct duties, blur the obligation to indemnify. Yes, there would have been no indemnity obligation here, because the state would have lost, and it did, so long as someone raised the defense. But that has nothing to do with Tycor's obligation to defend the Harts in the first instance. And nothing in Derry Road is to the contrary. To the extent
would you be here if the term claim was more clearly defined in the policy?
Perhaps not, Your Honor. Perhaps not.
If the policy said claim means like an affirmative pleading, complaint, cross-claim, counterclaim.
If the insurer
and does not include an affirmative defense and does not include a prayer?
If the insurer revised its policy to define claim, which it hasn't, and so we construe it liberally in favor of the insured, it's conceivable that they could define out claims like this, assuming the court allowed them to do that, assuming the court allowed them to tack on, you know, some formalistic or formal requirement or ability to limit their defense obligation in that way. Very possible, Your Honor. But that's not the case we have here. Here we have an undefined term, construed broadly in favor of the insured and broadly in favor of coverage. And Derry Road does not suggest that if there is superior knowledge based on extrinsic facts, That superior knowledge may be used to deny defense obligation. Derry Road merely says when the facts alleged unambiguously exclude the possibility of coverage, conclusory assertions regarding the legal significance of those facts are insufficient to trigger a duty to defend. The facts alleged. Here the allegation was we have interests in and affecting the property. We describe those interests as follows, six of them. One of them eschewed. Ask in the prayer for a specific ruling related to that specific claimed interest. Those are the measures of the defense obligation, not the extrinsic facts. And to the extent that the title company and its attorneys have superior knowledge, because they do this all the time, because they deal with the state all the time, then they are in the perfect position to resolve these kinds of claims. And if they truly are rampant, if the state is really, in fact, making frivolous reservations of escheat, the title company is in a better position than the individual insureds to make the state stop that practice. But the individual insured has no control over what kind of claim the state or any other party chooses to bring. No control over the form of the third party's pleadings. No control whether the form or merits of the third party's pleadings are defective on their face. If the claim is defective, it still requires a defense. If the pleading is in fact defective, the claim is in fact defective, then that defense obligation is easy to discharge. But the obligation still exists. And it existed here. And, Your Honors, for those reasons, we would ask that this court determine that the Harts were entitled to benefits, were entitled to a defense, reverse the judgment of the ICA, both as to the merits and to the award of fees, and remand for further proceedings.
What's your answer to Mr. Nasser's question about or observation that there are a lot of answers which might assert claims or might assert defenses like comparative negligence? Is there a duty to defend in that situation, because the insured might well come and say, well, someone's alleging that I engaged in conduct that amounted to negligence. If my interests aren't defended in this matter, they could be adversely affected. Would you say there should be coverage, or how would you differentiate between this case and that case?
I think I can differentiate between this case and that case based on the prayer. The prayer for relief asks the court to rule as an affirmative matter that the state has reserved any interest that may have eschewed to it. Affirmative defenses don't ask for specific prayer for relief. Affirmative relief in favor of the defendant or in favor of the defense, please rule that I acted with negligence or that I didn't act with negligence. They just want the claim dismissed. Here, the state was not defending against consolidation and resubdivision and recognition of erosion. The Harts recognize the state gets the eroded land. It's theirs. The state was asserting affirmative interests in the property and asking for affirmative rulings. Escheat wasn't the only one. As Justice Acoba pointed out early on, they asked for the free flowage of water.
We actually don't have an insurance policy in front of us that could tell us whether or not that is actually excluded under an auto insurance policy, correct?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
We don't really know whether or not there is a specific exclusion. It would be reasonable to assume that an auto policy would exclude such a comparative negligence claim. But we don't know. It's
may
not
well
before
could.
Us.
That's quite right, Your Honor. It may well could or could arise or be excluded as part of the definition of incurrence that may not cover that kinds of things. Very, very true, Your Honor. But in this case, we know we have a policy that ensures title is vested in the Harts and that pledges to defend the Harts if there's any adverse claim to that
Did
title.
Did Tigor mean by using the term present interest that there was a live controversy that existed? Is that what it meant by present interest? And so that would be, I guess, excluded under its policy.
The state didn't say present interest. It said interest that may have eschewed. It's phrased completely.
And there's nothing in the Tigor policy that limits it to present interest, correct? It just says.
Quite the contrary, Your Honor. The Tigor policy assures the Harts that as of the date of the policy, they own it. It's theirs. And so to have an allegation that an interest has been reserved to the state before title passed to them.
So they would defend if there was a present interest at stake.
Well, candidly, Your Honor, I don't know what and when title.
You would think, based on their position, they would defend.
I would hope they would. I would hope they would have in this case. Because the interest at stake was anything that had already passed to the state.
But they claim on the basis of the pleading there wasn't a present interest at stake.
Well, they can only get to that conclusion by misreading what the state actually said, because the interests claimed are all in the past tense.
Sorry.
Not in the future.
Just one more question.
Of course.
Does the fact that this is a land court case make a difference?
It shouldn't.
As opposed to other types of insurance coverage?
It shouldn't, Your Honor. The land court context merely provides a valid defense to the state's reservation. It leaves open the question, who should assert that defense? That question is answered by the policy when Tycor pledged to defend any claim adverse to the title or interest as insured. Thank you.
You know, I do have one additional question, if
of
you
course.
Don't mind. The policy does say, shall provide for the defense in which any third party asserts a claim adverse to the insured, but only as to those stated causes of action.
Yes, Your
Honor. Is causes of action defined?
It is not, Your Honor. What that, and I don't mean to go beyond what is actually before the court, but since the question came up, the answer to that, Your Honor, is that second part of the defense clause goes to whether Tycor has a duty to defend all claims. Ordinarily, of course, the rule is that if the duty to defend one claim arises, the insurer has an obligation to defend all claims until the possibility of coverage under one claim is conclusively resolved, including any appeal. Title insurance's policies are typically drafted in a way that would limit their defense obligation to the single covered claim. In the court below, we argued that as a matter of public policy, a title insurance company should not be entitled to limit its defense obligation to the single covered claim. But because the district court determined that Tycor did not even have an obligation to defend the escheat claim, it never reached the second issue, and we have not appealed it. On remand, that is one of the issues that should be addressed, but it is not an issue before this court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The court will take this matter under advisement.